Our lesson on Sunday, lesson two, we were talking about inspiration for teaching the lost. And we talked about various aspects of what it might be that helps to inspire us to teach the lost. And we talked some here on page three, some of these passages that we looked at. You know, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. And what we were talking about is that first, there has to be something in us, a hunger and thirst for righteousness that we just crave so much that when we find it, not only are we filled and blessed, but we can't wait to tell others about that. We talk some about the fact that we have to be prepared or ready to give answer for the hope that is in us. It's something that we have to work for and prepare for, such as in 2 Timothy chapter 2, the idea that we have to be diligent to present ourselves before God approved. And so we've spent a lot of time talking about those things, about the work that we need to do to prepare ourselves in this way. At the bottom of page 3, we talked some about the fact that we have to have a clear view on why we need to teach. Jesus is our example. In the fact that he was so very focused, that he understood his purpose, he knew his place in the plan of redemption and the responsibility that was placed on him. And really, we can probably use every one of those points as to why we need to be involved in teaching, that we need to be focused about being teachers. We need to understand the purpose that God has laid upon us to be teachers. We need to understand our place in God's plan of redemption, and the responsibility that he has put on us in view of that. So all of these are some points that we talked about on Sunday. On page 4, where we were at on Sunday, we talked about the point at the top of the page, that we should be inspired to teach. And quite frankly, it's sin that should inspire us. The fact that all have sinned implicates us all. And we understand the seriousness of sin and what it takes to get out of sin, and that sin separates us from God. We're looking at the point here found in Matthew chapter 16, beginning in verse 24. If you would take your Bibles, let's go there. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 24. The value of a soul. I'm not sure sometimes that we fully contemplate the value of a soul. It's one of those things that you have to stop and think about for a little bit to really understand the significance of this. Jesus understood, obviously, and he has said some things to maybe try to help us understand that better, but I think we'll have to think about it some. We're looking at Matthew chapter 16, verse 24. And Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what is a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" Let's think about that for a minute here. I mean, honestly, do we understand the value of a soul? I mean, you have to think on that some. Go back to verse 24, and let's take this apart just a little bit. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. What is Jesus talking about? I mean, what is he referring to here? You talk to me, son. Yeah, we're talking here about some priorities of some things. Denying self, I mean, how is it that we are to deny ourself? Earl?
We have to die to self willingly. Mm-hmm. We have to be of the same mind that Jesus was, not my will, but thy will be done. And willing to do whatever it takes to please God, as Jesus was when he went to the cross,
this idea of denying self here and dying to self, verse 24, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself. Well, how so? What is that? Take up his cross and follow me. What's the significance of that? What's the reference to that? There's a parallel we can make with Jesus on that. If we think about this some, I think it'll help us understand the power of the passage and what it is to deny self. Sure. Mm-hmm. It could have very well happened every day. Mm-hmm. That's right. Sure. Mm-hmm. They understood. You want me to do what? Yeah. And he would demonstrate that, you know, that they didn't fully understand that yet, but he did. And so the power of what he's saying kind of came later on, you know, and we can see and understand that now. Okay, so we're back to this idea of denying self again. Mm-hmm. What's going to kill you? Mm-hmm.
So that's just like anybody else. If you're going to be carrying your own news, if you're not carrying your gun, you are carrying, and it changed your mindset when you were having to carry the actual weapon.
Oh, yeah.
That was going to end your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's saying our mindset has to be different. It has to be different.
It's almost like, and this sounds funny to say it this way, it's almost like you have to kill yourself. I don't mean literally, but it is such a change that has to take over. It's like a part of you dying when you deny yourself that you might live again, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He becomes paramount in everything we do. So now, let's parlay this into the rest of the passage. We start thinking about, we're getting some impression here about the significance and power of denying oneself, taking up, you know, one's cross and following me, as Jesus says. Whoever desires to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. You know, here's the mind shift that's going to have to take place, you know, to get so close to Jesus. So then how does this work into verse 26? For what is a man profit if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Okay, we're talking about the value of a soul here. That's what we're bringing this around to. What is this telling us? Yeah. Yeah, but here's what you have to do.
This is how serious.
Yeah.
The dedicated effort you've got to make if you will choose.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something you take flippantly. You don't just.
So how many at first were saying, well, yeah, sure, I'll follow you, but here's what it's going to cost. How many said, well, wait a minute now. Now, you know, do what? So how does this come into the point then of the value of a soul? We do. That's right.
And so he was speaking figuratively in the beginning, and now he is changing it to, this is how you think in these terms. So I'm going to put it to you in these terms. How much is your soul?
And how do you qualify that? I mean, you're right. There's a lot of things. We can put a value on a lot of things. You have a watch, you can put a value on that. You know, you have some coin in your pocket, you can put some value to that. You have a car, you can put some value to that. How do you put value on a soul, Earl? Willing even to deny himself and carry that cross, might I add. We never stop long enough to think about a value of a soul in that way. Obviously, God has. What's that?
You could gain the whole world.
Yeah, that's right.
And it still
isn't enough. That's still not. Yeah, still not enough. Go ahead. Yeah. One soul. That's right. One soul. Wow. Do we ever stop and think about that? You know, I mean, the value of one soul. I mean, God put it in those terms of even the value of one soul. And so when we start, you know, we're talking here about, what, I mean, what's our inspiration to teach? Duh. You know, the value of one soul is worth more than the world could even hold. And so, I mean, does God place a value on souls? Well, yeah, even one soul. And so we start thinking then, I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, our responsibility to teach and our preparation we need to make for teaching, and just the fact that we need to try to be teaching others. You know, when you start putting it in perspective this way, it's the value of a soul. Even that should motivate us. Even if one is saved, just one, that's significant to God. Even if we never fully understand the significance of that, God does. Absolutely. Yeah, there you go. Yes. Good point. What else? What are thoughts? Yeah.
Jesus was literally offered the whole world.
Oh, hey.
And Satan tempted Jesus.
That's right.
Taking him on a high mountain, showing the kingdom of the world. And said, if you'll just bow down and worship me, I'll give all this to you.
Yeah.
But if Jesus had bowed down and worshiped him, none of us would have had
hope. We would have no hope.
And I think Jesus himself would have been lost.
Yeah.
Bow down and worship Satan.
Jesus, understanding the value of a soul, knew that wasn't a good deal, you know.
special creation of every individual, and we have an eternal soul. The difference is extremely stark and amazingly opposite. When you think about what an atheist sees as valuable, only relates to what that person can provide for society or contribute to society.
No value. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So opposite from God's perspective. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Good thoughts. Other points or comments on that? Let's look a little farther right here. So we were just talking about why we should be inspired to teach the value of a soul. The next point here is the compassion of Jesus. We're looking at Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9, the very end of that chapter, we're going to begin reading here at verse 35. Matthew 9, verse 35. And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered, like sheep having no shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray the Lord of harvest that he will send out laborers into his harvest." Interesting passage here. We need to kind of look at and think about some. Our question, why was Jesus so moved when he looked out over these people? What did he see? What moved him so?
People were lost.
Now, very simply, people were lost, and that was striking to him. What else can you say to it? Where's the pickers, so to speak? I mean, he would perceive there was a great harvest here. What else?
Since they were lost, like sheep without a shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
Which I read that, I think, he's saying something about the fact that they had no real spiritual leadership.
All right. Beautiful point. Where do we go with that? I mean, what about today? I mean, Jesus would look at the lost of the world and he would say the same thing. Sheep without a shepherd. All right? All right, well, why was Jesus so moved when he looked at these people? He saw their needs. He saw that they were wearied. They were tired. They were scattered. They had no direction. They were without a shepherd. Jesus at one time would define himself as the great shepherd. You know, and so of course when he would look at these people, he would see that need. What do you see in the character of Jesus with regard to his view of the lost? We're thinking about Jesus. What do we see in his character with what he sees when he sees the lost? How would you describe his character?
Compassion.
He loved them. He saw them as, and this is, well, I guess I'm thinking about this some. He saw their needs, he saw they were lost, he saw they were scattered. I mean, what is appealing about this picture? Okay, that they were in need, you know, they didn't know which way to go. They were wearied, you know, that this is not a pretty picture. And yet he loved them. He had compassion. He sees this as an opportunity. And let's be honest, sometimes when we see some people that are lost, wearied, scattered, have no spiritual direction, how do we view that? I'm afraid we go like, whoa, hey, this is a mess. You know, I'm not going to sign up for this. We back up. I mean, we may very well back up. And Jesus looks at that and says, opportunity. You know, there is need. And not only was there need, but he knew how to fulfill the need. Well, we should know how to fulfill the need as well. Interesting picture as we think about this. The text says Jesus was moved with compassion. We kind of talked about this already. Why and in what way was he moved? Well, he felt for them. He understood their pain. He saw the need and he knew how to fill that. What is the meaning of the text when it says that they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd? How would you define that, the meaning of the text? They didn't know how to get there. You ever get lost? I mean, just lost. I mean, I've learned a new perspective about lost in the last 4 weeks. There is not a road in this city that can take you from point A to point B. There is not. I mean, I've never seen anything like it in my life. You know? Of course, now I grew up in the north and out in the rural country in Michigan. Everything's on a 1 mile grid. You can't get lost anywhere. If you want to get over here, all you have to do is go like this. You know, left, right, left, right, left, right, and you follow a grid and you can get there. You can't get lost. You got into forest land or something like that. You know, I can get lost getting out of this parking lot. I mean, it has been the most incredible thing trying to get around this city. And I mean, I want to go to the condo and I know where it is at. But until just the last week, things are finally starting to click here. There have been times where I could not get from here to there without having to have the GPS to figure out where am I at and how am I going to get there. I mean, and it's just frustrating. Yeah, and that doesn't always help. You know, that doesn't always help. You are right about that. Yeah. Twice I've had the GPS tell me you are here or you are there. You have arrived, and it's like, yeah, I've arrived, but not where I wanted to arrive. It is not at all where I wanted to be. Twice that's happened since we've been here. That's not even right. Well, some things Les said here just kind of worked into this point. I mean, here were a people following Jesus, some of whom I think were trying to get somewhere. You know, they knew they were supposed to be something. They knew, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, they were supposed to pattern their life in a certain way, but they couldn't get there. They had not had a shepherd to get them there. Well, Jesus could fix that. He could provide that. Yeah, let's just go ahead and say it. They're not real smart, you know. That's right, in an amazing way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Vulnerable, lost, clueless on what way to go. You think about those things and you picture Jesus looking over this multitude. And he has compassion because he knows they are lost. He knows that they are lost, and he can fix that. He looks at that and he says, you know, the harvest is truly plentiful, but the laborers are few. Who's the laborers? We're the laborers. So how are we doing as laborers? All right? I mean, here we have Jesus saying that the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. I wonder, is the harvest any less prolific today? Well, it's more so. Yeah, right. We're the laborers, folks. We are the ones here that are supposed to have purpose and focus and be inspired to be the teachers, to seek and save the lost, even as Jesus did. So the personal application part of this, I mean, we've asked the question, are you a laborer in the kingdom of God? I can't answer for you. And I'm not asking you to tell us. You know the answer. But we all understand that we need to be laborers in the kingdom. And we have to want to improve to do that. Other thoughts? Questions on that point? Yeah, leave it. Right.
So as a laborer, you have to go find the sheep to bring them back to the pasture.
Right. Right. Much like the parable of Jesus. You know, you have to go find them. It was interesting. A friend of mine went on a trip to the Holy Lands, as we call them. And at some point on this trip, they had gone to a place where there were a lot of sheep and shepherds. And they were all kind of in this one general area. They were kind of on a hill overlooking this. They just kind of happened upon this at the right time, you know, what they saw. And he said something so amazing took place. You know, there were three or four shepherds, and there was a whole bunch of sheep out there, and they were all together. And he said, I just thought, man, what a mess that is. I mean, how are they going to get control of all these sheep? And then one of the shepherds started calling for his sheep, and he started walking off. And so all of the sheep took off and followed? Oh, no. No. The sheep knew the voice of the shepherd. And about, you know, a number of the sheep started following him, and as he kind of went over the hill, all of his sheep were following him. There were still all these others down there. Then another shepherd started calling, and he was going off to another field over there, and his sheep followed. That happened with all four shepherds. And he said, I never in my life would have fully understood how a shepherd can hear and identify the voice of a shepherd had I not seen that. And that's just has stuck in my mind. That's an amazing point. You know, that the sheep know the sound of their shepherd's voice. Another lesson in that by itself. I thought that was interesting. All right. Let's look at the next point here in the bottom of page 4. And this is not necessarily any right or wrong kind of answer. It's kind of just a thinking thing where we're just kind of processing some things through, you know, answer these questions, you know. On what should we be focused? I mean, the emphasis here being we and focused. On what should we be focused? What would you say? Christ. Yeah. What else? Yeah, the same things Jesus. I mean, if we are disciples of Jesus, then wouldn't we be focused on the same things as Jesus? Sure. What is our purpose? How would you answer that? What is our purpose?
I see that as a twofold thing. We have to save
And until we get our life in line with the shepherd, we're not going to be too successful leading anybody else to him. Yeah, good point. I mean, that helps us to kind of redefine our purpose, following the shepherd, even so that we can lead others. What is our place in God's plan? The sower. I mean, even as he was a sower. Okay, yeah. Our place to be busy about the work in the kingdom? Sure. Anything else you'd say? Yeah, we're the laborers. Sure. Absolutely. Good. Okay. What responsibility is placed on us? Kind of interesting. Think about responsibility. You know, when we're children and we're in school, a teacher may give us an assignment and say, here's what I want you to do. We understand that. To get a passing grade in the class, we have to do what the teacher says. We're going to do that. In the workplace, you know, in the workplace, we may think it's a wonderful day when our boss comes to us and says, man, you have done such a wonderful job, you know, doing this right here. We are going to promote you, and because of that, and here is the added responsibility that's being given to you. And we would accept that responsibility, you know, in a very cheerful way, because we've been recognized in that way. We understand what responsibility is in those terms, and we think of it that way. Well, what responsibility has God placed on us? Several things we could answer that with. What responsibility is placed on us? Faithfulness. Yeah. To recognize and to know truth and to obey it. Sure. What else would you say?
To serve.
Yeah. Responsibility to serve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's right. Responsibility is still given to each one. Good point. Other thoughts? They could bring them to the teacher.
That's what they could do.
Right.
They could go out and find people and bring them to
the teacher. That's right. And now we have the lessons of the teacher, you know, to use and to share. Good thoughts, y'all. All right. Bottom of the page. We can't wait for others to do the work. Personal evangelism is not so much what you do, it is who you are. All right. What does that mean? I mean, we've been talking here about all the things that we need to be doing. And yet, here I make this statement, you know, personal evangelism is not so much what you do, it's who you are. What's the point? It has to be who we are, truly. A part of us. You know, it's interesting. I've been to a number of places where, you know, churches are sometimes looking for personal evangelism program. You know, everybody, we're kind of in this mindset. Everything needs to be a program, you know. I don't get a personal evangelism program. I just don't. Either we are evangelistic or we're not. Yes or no, up or down. It is who we are or it's not. I mean, you can paint and powder it up however you want and make it a program or whatever. If it's not who we are, It doesn't work.
If we're disciples of Christ, we're going to do what Christ did.
It's who we are. And it should be kind of just a natural thing. Well, of course we're going to be looking for wandering sheep, so to speak. Of course we're going to be looking for those who are lost and looking for a way out. It's who we are. Yeah, Earl? Yeah.
Now, we need to do that. None of us ever do it like he did.
Yeah. That's right.
And he looked at every soul with compassion. And like you made the point in one of the other classes the other day, you know, we're out there in the world going about our business every day. You know, I'm at Lowe's and I'm buying some stuff and I'm talking to the guy at the counter, the pro desk about this or that or the other, and I'm all into what I'm talking about. And I'm not, at that moment in time, I'm not viewing him
as a soul. Yeah.
And I'm not viewing it the way I ought to view it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sometimes we gotta do a little paradigm shift there. Good thoughts, y'all. Good points tonight. Yeah.
And so I'm not striving to find somebody I can talk to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes we have to go looking. Good thoughts. Thank you. Lesson 3, Lord willing, on Sunday. We are starting lesson 3, which is pages 5 and 6. Who needs that? Who needs lesson 3? Anybody? I know we've passed some of those out.